Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine.
You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hey, I heard you need an inspiration. He's a lot of end friends with some revelations. Little known back to the day. Every little thing's gonna be a-okay.
Little known fact about my guest today, she was born Terry Sue, but changed her name to Tova. And by doing so, the roles, the characters, the story she was able to tell have created pieces of art that live in our minds and hearts and have done so for decades. Welcome Tova Felchu to the podcast.
A-OK.
Hey everyone, my guest today is Tova Felchu. Tova is a six-time Emmy and Tony nominee and is currently performing in her 10th Broadway show, Funny Girl. Previous Broadway credits include Yentl, Cyrano, Rodgers and Hart, Dreyfus in Rehearsal, Sarava, Lend Me a Tenor, Gold is Balcony, Irina's Vow, and Pippin. She wrote an extraordinary memoir called Lilyville, focused on the story of her growing up and her relationship with her mother. Some of her many film credits include Kissing Jessica Stein, A Walk on the Moon, Brewster's Millions, Just My Luck, Daniel, The Idolmaker, Golda's Balcony, and in the last few months, she has completed two features, one playing Sir Anthony Hopkins' wife and Anne Hathaway's mother in Armageddon, and the second playing the matriarch Rosalind Russell in Start Without Me. On TV, she can be seen on The Walking Dead, Law and Order, POTUS, Salvation, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and Scenes from a Marriage. She really is a staple of the New York theater and our movie and television screens. Tova, welcome to Little Known Facts.
Thank you so much, Lana.
You are so welcome. So I'm speaking with you today on a Thursday. You started Funny Girl how long ago now?
4 weeks.
Tell me what your relationship is to Funny Girl.
Well, I got a call from my beloved pal, Daryl Roth, who's produced, I've worked for her two or three times, most notably in Irina's Vow by Dan Gordon, which played the Walter Kerr. And she said, would you be interested in playing Rosie Bryce? And I think the call came in around May. And I said, I wouldn't be uninterested. Send me the script and let me see the show. And I watched the show twice. And then I heard that they were finalizing negotiations with Lea Michele and that I would be paired with her. And I took the opportunity to say yes, never knowing for a minute that it would be the explosion it has become. You don't know what you're in until you're in it. When I did the Holocaust miniseries, which was the second miniseries in the history of television, if you think we thought it would become world renowned at the time and changed the textbooks in Germany, it's not true. We didn't know what the consequences would be. Likewise, how many times do you get to do a show where you're not worried about ticket sales, where you're so sold out, where there are standing ovations mid-show for a great star? And I think that Fanny Bryce is the greatest role written in the American musical theater for a woman. The greatest, I say, more than Mama Rose, because Mama Rose shares the stage with Gypsy Rose Lee. This one is the hub of her own wheel. This is the story of Fanny Bryce. and the brilliant Ramin Karimloo and the brilliant Jared Grimes, and I hope the very good me. We are the spokes in her wheel. We're the three most notable spokes, but the entire cast is.
Did you love the movie? What was your relationship to the original show?
Well, I'm about to give you my little known fact that would be at the end of the show.
Okay.
Coming up, because you keep asking. I auditioned for Funny Girl in one of its many incarnations when they wanted to mount it. And I made it to the finals, and Julie Stein walked up to me and he said, "You are so funny, but you're not funny looking." And I didn't get the job. And I don't think anybody got the job. I think the piece was abandoned again because everybody was concerned about filling the shoes of the legendary and astonishing Barbra Streisand. And that went on for 60 years. So I was no longer eligible for Fanny, who's supposed to be a teenager. As a matter of fact, another little known fact is that my first day of rehearsal, it says, "And you serve beer to your children." I said, "Not this Jewish mother doesn't." I said, "We have to change the labels." "Oh, nobody will know." I said, "I will know."
Mm-hmm.
Florence Ziegfeld bought the best Parisian underwear for the Ziegfeld Follies. They say, "Flo, why did you spend so much money on the underwear of these girls? Nobody sees it." And he said, "The women see it, the girls see it." So I serve Eddie Ryan and my little daughter, Fanny, sarsaparilla, drinks. And those details, I was very lucky because working with Michael Mayer, he did not ask us to replace, he asked us to recreate. And he gave us latitude to do so in our own fashion. And I think that's what makes the performances.
Yeah. I always wondered, you know, there's a lot of focus on this being Jewish, a Jewish family. Can you talk to me about the last name Bryce? Do you have a thought about that?
Yeah, it's a change name. Just like I was born Terry Sue and my Hebrew name is Tov, and I took it on when I fell in love with a Christian boy named Michael Fairchild, who was at Wesleyan. And I was barely 18. I had no idea that changing my name would change the entire landscape of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm in my third act, and I promise you I will have four acts. I plan to live to 104. But now that I am in my senior citizenship, anybody who's vaguely happy with their life is happy with their choices. In other words, there's no reason to regret taking on Tova Feltsu versus Terry Sue Feltsu 50 years ago when I've spent two-thirds of my life as that with that name. And what happened is that my perceived value completely changed. And I think it brought me luck. I think I had to fight to play Katharine Hepburn. I had to fight to play three queens of Henry VIII. But I never had to fight to play Yentl, Holocaust, Golda Meir, Naomi Bunch in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
and Daniel Melnick in Law and Order, and in this case, Rosie Bryce. I mean, I didn't audition for Rosie Bryce. And her first of all, her name isn't Rosie Bryce, it's Rosia Branagh, and it was changed for the stage. Mm-hmm. She owned four saloons, not in Brooklyn. She owned four saloons in Manhattan. Now she owned one saloon in Brooklyn. And I'm the first person of the Jewish religion to play Rosie Bryce in New York. It's been given to Irish Catholic actresses or actresses of the Irish Catholic background, which is really interesting. So Harvey Firestein, in rewriting this, clearly it says Mazel Tov Fanny right across Henry Street. So there are changes in this production that you can bet your bippy were not in 1964. After all, 1964 was less than 20 years after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Jews were very, very busy wanting to be American and assimilating and going to Brooks Brothers. I mean, there may not have been Japanese or German cars in Scarsdale, New York, where I was brought up, but I was in Scarsdale, New York, and I owned a horse,
mm-hmm.
you know? Mm-hmm. And my father would say, "How often can a little girl tell a big animal what to do?" So we were, and this was before Ralph Lauren. I remember there was John Meyer of Norwich, who was the first one, this Connecticut Jew, who actually related, I think, vaguely to Jennifer Westfeldt in some way, because she was related to Marshall Meyer. The first Jew who had that piercing insight into what do the American Brahmins wear? What do the WASPs wear? Oh, they mm-hmm. wear this. Well, let's make this available for everybody. And then Ralph Lauren just flew with it.
Yeah.
In terms of a Jewish story. It's an immigrant story. Rosie Bronnick didn't come here till she was 10. And had I been involved in the production from 1964, 63, I mean, I was just being bat mitzvahed at the time. Had I been involved in it, I would have asked for a slight, maybe she spoke with a slight Hungarian accent, mm-hmm. slight affect that was from Hungary, like mm-hmm. all of my grandparents were from Austria, Germany, Russia, and England. So everybody had, no wonder I speak, you know, five languages.
Yeah.
Sounds when I was a kid.
Wait, so let me ask you, were you, you know, so much of people getting to see Broadway is about proximity. So growing up in New York and Westchester, did you, you were aware of Funny Girl when it was on Broadway in the 60s, I imagine?
I went to see it.
What?
I went to see it. Sure.
Okay. Do you remember? I mean, you were very young. What do you remember?
You only remember her. You vaguely remember Sidney Chaplin, Kay Medford. These were like spokes in a wheel. You only remembered her. They hired Barbara Streisand. And I believe, this is my assumption, I could be wrong. In my mythology or my folkloric tale about this, I believe they hired her and they wrote for her. The minute they mm-hmm. got her, they added, "Oh my man, I love him so," which is not in our show, because the show gives much more credence to Nicky Arnstein. Mm-hmm. But we wouldn't get an actor like Ramin, who's mm-hmm. just unbelievable and only has 1% body fat on him. That man is the sexiest thing. I'm so glad my dressing room is next to him. I'm between him and Fanny. And when I say in the second act, there are places a mother doesn't belong, in the middle of a marriage is one of them. I'm right in the middle of that marriage, architecturally. We share yeah. one floor. It's very exciting to just be with them on one floor. Very
thin. Yeah, that's great. That's great. How incredible that you saw that show, and what a full circle moment. I want to...
more than a full circle moment. Because my first marquee was Yentl. So my connection to Barbara Streisand was through Yentl.
It's incredible. Yeah. Did you have a relationship with her?
We became fond acquaintances over the film Kissing Jessica Stein. She called me out of the blue to congratulate me about my work as Judy Stein, notably the porch scene. So that was, and she lived across the street at the Ardsley. We live on Central Park West. And we got to a point where she called and she would say, "Tova, I'm moving. You want my chazarai," which means my crap in Yiddish.
Course,
I
yes.
said, "Barbara, the truck is arriving." So I have her crystal. I have her menorah. I have her planters. I even have a pair of Donna Karan sneakers that she gave me. And I said, "If I wear these shoes, will I sing better?" And she's been absolutely a doll. And then, as irony and fate would have it, Sidney Feltschuh, my brilliant father, represented Sheldon Streisand, her brother. And my husband, also a Harvard lawyer like my father, Andrew Harris Levy, represented Barbara Streisand in the sale of that Ardsley apartment, even though he was head of real estate for Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher. You know, when you have unlimited amount of money, you can hire the overqualified to do wild things. So he handled that property for her. So we were connected in various wonderful ways, and she's always been wonderful to me, very kind. You know, I would go see her and I'd get to go back to her dressing room. And she was very fond of Andy. Andy did a very good job for her. So I was very lucky. I did see the movie, but I didn't see it again before I took the part. I did not. I just looked at the script and I said, "Can I make this ping?" That would be P-I-N-G. "Can I really mine, M-I-N-E, this part? Can I excavate this part to the universal? To the mother-daughter relationship, because not all of it's on the page." I mean, this is a show that's supposed to function for a major journey of Fanny, and Harvey, thank God, added another arc, because Nicky Arnstein has a very clear arc in this, and I don't remember him at all with Sidney Chaplin. And lore has it that Franny Arnstein, Frances Arnstein, the inheritor of the estate, their one daughter of Nicky and Fanny, did not want Streisand, and the creators of the show, Robert Marilyn, Julie Stein, etc., so they absolutely had to have Streisand. Says, "Well, if you're going to pick Streisand, I'm going to pick Nicky Arnstein." So the father's going to be Sidney Chaplin, and then Sidney Chaplin came, and I don't think they found him the answer to their dreams. So he kept fading away, and I barely remember him. But Harvey is right. Fanny's going to look like an idiot if she just falls for any old thing that isn't defined. So I'm very proud of this show. I've been in, it's my 10th Broadway show, and I've had hits, and I've had less successful pieces I've been part of, but I've never been in a theatrical event. This is a theatrical event, and we have a lot of people to thank for it.
I want to ask you about, you know, you mentioned sort of your given name and then switching your name to Tova professionally and personally. Can you talk a little bit about what the inspiration for that was?
So as I'm talking to you, and I must say this is, you talk about privileged information, this is the first time I ever have had this thought, and I've been on this planet for quite a few decades. Family must mean everything to me. Like my literary agent walked in, Albert Lee walked into my living room and he said, "What do you want to write about? Family obviously means everything to you. They're all over the mantle." You know, yes, do I have a picture with Anthony Banderas? Do I have a picture with Barbara? Do I have a picture with Margaret Thatcher? Yes, I do. But I have pictures of my family and my father as a baby and my mother as a baby and my grandparents and my grandparents, you know, engagement picture in England before they came to America. So family must mean everything to me. And one of the reasons I changed my name, which I never understood, was not just that Michael Fairchild, who's just a wonderful man, loved Tova. He said, "Tova, now that's a name. All the vowels and you go, oh, like your lips purse together and ah, and your mouth becomes a cathedral." And, you know, it's much more sexual, if you will, and open and feminine than Terry Sue. Terry is a binary name for a man or a woman. And I know that's chic now, but it was not chic in the 50s and 60s when I was growing up. My godfather's dog was named Terry. Terry Culp at Scarsdale High was named Terry, a boy. I got to Paris to study. Terry is a man's name, like Terry Mugler. It was just, Terry didn't exist in Spanish. I was called Teresa. It was just, you know, the Debbies became Deborahs and the Terrys remained Terrys. I was never Teresa or anything like that. But I must have loved Tova, not just for Michael's sake and for being more grown up and more of a sexy dish. It's my lineage. It just hit me. It's the name my forebears had. I was named after my mother's beloved Aunt Tilly, who died early from cancer, and her name was Tova. And that must have had a subconscious meaning for me, because I've not only not been bothered by the name, I quite like the name. My speech teacher at Juilliard, Edith Warman Skinner, she would say, "I don't know why you have the name Felchu." She'd just go like Madonna, one name, Tova. And again, in those days, who would do such a thing? It wasn't legitimate. I came from the classical theater, from the Guthrie Theater, and studied, you know, and did Juliet and Isabella for Jack O'Brien at the National Shakespeare Festival in San Diego, played Stratford opposite Eileen Atkins in As You Like It. I was busy being Tova Felchu, a classically trained actress who could do anything. That was my ambition. My ambition was never fame. It was always excellence, excellence and transformation. And I've lived that dream for five decades. As a matter of fact, unbeknownst to me, I was talking to a young teenager, it's like 13, and he said, "This is your 50th year in film." I said, "It is?" He said, "Yes. In 1972, you did Scream Pretty Peggy with Betty Davis." I said, "I did for Universal, and I was killed before the credits, but they offered me a contract." And I said, "Are you offering me a contract because I'm gifted, because you believe that I have some talent?" And they said, "No, we're offering you a contract because of your skin. You have the most beautiful skin." I said, "You're offering me a contract because of my skin?" And then I turned the contract down. They wouldn't pay for my dancing and my singing lessons. I said, "You paid for Judy. You paid for Mickey. Why don't you pay for..." I mean, I think of myself when I was a kid. Boy, did I have... I had profound values that I lived by. But in terms of expedient common sense and becoming famous and wealthy, I didn't operate that way, which is why I had to leave Hollywood at the time. I remember saying back then, if God passes over Hollywood, he owes Sodom and Gomorrah a big apology. Now that has changed. Now this changed. Now it's much more sophisticated. And you know, you have geniuses like James Gray living out there. Jane Lynch lives in Montecito. People live all over the place, but
Right,
they're all
right.
on the West Coast. And
But that sense of, I mean, the integrity, I understand sort of, I understand integrity, but that kind of self-confidence. I mean, you're a mom, you've raised kids, you can love them, appreciate them, steer them in the right direction. Certain things are just innate. Like there's nothing you can do to give someone self-confidence. It's this thing that comes from within. And where did that understanding, like, can you talk about that understanding, like, oh, you're not paying for this or that? No, thank you. Like, how did you have that kind of gravitas at such a young age?
Some of it was innocent, some of it was vision, and a lot of it was Sydney. I could never write a memoir, Sydneyville, because it would be 2 pages long. We had very little conflict. I was my dad's girl. He used to sing Terry Sue, doodaloo doo doo. I love you, doodaloo doo doo. Yes, I do. He used to sing it, and we'd say, he said, you're so beautiful. You're a beautiful person. So I've never had any plastic surgery, and I don't have Botox. I mean, I have the map of New York over my face, and so the stage is very kind because you don't see the wrinkles up close, and I still have decent features. And of course, as you get older, your cheekbones get bigger because gravity is sitting there, you know, lowering everything, including your breasts down to your belly button. So
Do you have a do you have an opinion about that, or is that just for you,
I
or?
always think I'm good looking because my father said I was good looking. And then I look in the mirror and it's shocking to me. So shocking, I put a beat in Funny Girl where I look in the mirror, and the mother looks in the mirror, and I just did what other Rosies didn't choose to do. And I look in the mirror, I look at my face, and then I lift my face, like as if I'm gonna have a facelift. Audience laughs in recognition, and then I drop my face and I go on with the show. Which at that moment, well, who taught her everything she knows? So I asked to tap dance in the show, and of course I sing in the show, but I also dance in the show because where the heck does Fanny get it from? It isn't from somebody who's a drunk who runs a saloon and is some kind of a slob. She's the master of her own ship. I asked for keys to be put on my belt. I have a key for the bar, key for the saloon, key for the house. And a hanging watch. Check the time. I'm an entrepreneur. I get stuff done. Now, in terms of my confidence, you're right. You can't teach it. I have two magnificent children who I would give my life for them, as would Andy. One mirrors me. It's my daughter, Amanda. She has great confidence and great ability to make decisions. And one mirrors Andy, who considers everything. Brandon, you know, Brandon was a merit scholar, went to Harvard. He's no slouch. He's brilliant, but he sees 50 possibilities where maybe I only saw two. I don't know. I don't know.
What,
But
for those who haven't read Lilyville yet, and they should, your entree into the world of the arts and wanting to be an artist as a dancer, as a singer, as an actress, where did those seeds first get planted for you?
well, my mother played classical piano, and I wanted to be near her, so I studied piano as a little girl, and just to be near my mother. And I think it's very significant that we never played a four-handed piece. So you want to talk about obstacles and trying to gain the mother's love. My father was a litigator, so he wrote his own plays and he tried them out in the courtroom where people went to jail or didn't, you know. And he took me to the Supreme Court when I was 5. He took me to the Supreme Court. I couldn't stay in the courtroom, but I saw it, and he had to try a case. And I worked in his law library for a dollar an hour. I just wanted to be near my dad. Why did I want to be near my dad? Because he loved me unconditionally, and he knew death. His father died when he was 16, within a week, a very shocking death. And he was in the intelligence during the war, and he left. He was drafted into the war, and then my mother got pregnant before he went to boot camp. And she gave birth to David in 1944. My father didn't show up till 1946, till David was over 2 years old. So when I was born, well, after the war, I was his first infant, and he never left my side. He understood that life in this body isn't forever, and he transmitted that value to me. And that is why we live each day to its fullest. I also think, to be honest with you, that the Jewish people have a great advantage. because we understand the possibility of extinction. And once you have extinction hovering over you as a specter, who has the most Nobels? Who has the most copyrights? Who has the most inventions? Little Israel. It's not even the size. What is it? The size of half of Connecticut or something? And because they're surrounded in their heads or in reality by people who would rather that they don't exist. So they make the most of each day and have unspeakable courage, probably far more courage than I do. And I'm not Israeli. I am a dyed-in-the-wool American. I ain't making any aliyah. God bless them for what they do. I just send money and raise money for charities like Sheret Tzedek and Ben Gurion University and stuff like that. So my confidence, I think, came from Sid, and my common sense came from Lily. She would say things like, if you fall in love with a boy, run, don't walk to his home. If it doesn't feel like a warm bath, it's a red flag. And when I went to Michael Fairchild's, when I went to Michael Fairchild's home, and I was so besotted with this guy, I couldn't see straight. He was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. His parents were lovely, but they were missing. They were living in the in St. John's. They were travel agents, and they had their 5 o'clock cocktails. And he lived with his fabulous grandmother in Cold Spring Harbor, which until recently was a restricted neighborhood. And I got to see all sorts of places that normally they would not let us into. And I knew this would be ultimately the wrong match, that to cross cultures in a marriage is a very big order. And if you have any cellular coincidence with somebody, you grab it. Unfortunately, Nikki Arnstein and Fanny Bryce did not have enough cellular coincidence. Fanny may be many things, and she was ambitious, and she may have been driven with excellence and humor to get to the top. But I don't think she was a thief. I don't think she was an embezzler. I don't think she was a crook. And Nikki had to resort to things that he could not hold his head up high. That was against federal law, and went to jail.
What has kept you as passionate and engaged with the craft of storytelling as that young teenager who you saw recently 50 years ago to the day in terms of film and crazy. You know, I mean, 5 decades, what is it that you look for? What, I mean, you have choices, which is an extraordinary thing. You create your own work. What is the thing that tells you, yes, this?
Well, I, first of all, I shut my eyes and go to the woman on the mountain, the me that's the best me, and say, do I want to wake up every day doing this? The greatest thing about our profession is the transformational invitation, and also a way to cope with marriage. I have a very good marriage, but man, people want their wife and they want their mother. They are not the least bit interested in one standing ovation or not. I am not available to babysit Brandon's children, Amelia, aged 6 months, and Sydney May, his two daughters, age 2, on Saturday night. And I regret it. I feel badly. Of course, I have St. Andrew, who's going to go to Quag, where we have our summer home for Friday and Saturday, then come back by 6:30 at night to let my daughter-in-law, Jamie, and Brandon go out and babysit. So, you know, no matter, when Andy and I would be the Bickersons, all the big pillars were intact. The love, we're not addicts, we're not addicted. I mean, maybe we're slightly addicted to food, like most of the tribe, but we're not addicts. We're not crooks. We're not, you know, the big pillars are in place. We really agree on family values. But when we bicker on the small details and we do a lot of things differently from one another, at 5 o'clock, when I get off the phone with you, I bike ride to the theater, or I'll take the subway, or I'll take my Uber. They give me an allowance for a car and driver. I will shut my eyes and go into the tunnel of Rosie Bryce.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the highlights of my day. It's one of the highlights of my day. 8 times a week, people screaming? Come on. And they scream for Julie Benko too. So we have an American story inside American story. So here's Leah Michelle supposedly resurrecting her reputation. I mean, please, I haven't had a bad moment with this woman. She's an angel. She's an angel. So, and then within that, we have Julie Banco building, spiraling up toward recognition. As I said to her, this is your last standby, sweetie pie. This is it. This is your launch. She has a big following.
Yeah.
I mean, they may not sell every seat at the August Wilson on Thursday night, but it's a full house.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So it's great. And that Leah takes Thursday off is brilliant. With a piece like this and 22 changes and God knows how many, I think it's 22 costume changes. Are you kidding me? She does one Tuesday, two Wednesday rest, one Friday, two Saturday, one Sunday rest. And she's magnificent. There's never been a glitch, not even a glitch. And we finally have, despite COVID, all the members of the cast in. The first choice is, you know, in, and who were cast originally, who started previews March 26th, except for, you know, Beanie and Jane. So Leah and I are there instead. And I love you, Beanie, and I love you, Jane, and thank you for all you do. And I mean it from my heart, from my heart.
So what was the moment or the moments where you decided, I want to do this as a profession?
Oh, when I was put on the wait list at Harvard Law School.
So
I went to Harvard Law School and I was on the wait list and nobody lifted a finger in those days. I was a legacy. And instead of going to Harvard Law School, I applied for the McKnight Fellowship in Acting at the suggestion of my incredible brother, David Felchew, who had won it 5 years earlier. I applied for it. I won it. We were the first brother-sister act at the Guthrie, and David was made associate artistic director, I think, by the time I arrived.
Mm-hmm.
We went from being a supporting actor to being this associate artistic director. And that's how I met and was trained under Michael Langham and was basically a spear carrier for 2 years. And when it came my time to inherit Hermie, I write about this, they called me into the office and said, there's a principal actor in this company whose wife's unhappy, who's also an actress, and she wants your part, and we're giving it to her because it's important to keep this actor happy. It has nothing to do with your talent. But that was it for me. I said, I'm out of here. These people do not believe in me. I am I'm not even a speck of dust to these people. You know, a person's a person, no matter how small. He believed Dr. Spock now, or whatever, the guy who wrote,
Seuss.
Dr. Seuss is now under, we're all so accountable, God forbid. Yeah. Man, when I was a child, there was humor that you can't say now, it can't even cross your lips, you know, nothing. So anyway, a person's a person, no matter how small, and I love that quote. So that was, Michael Langham did me a great turn, because that was, I remember coming home to David at 612 6th Avenue, Southeast in Minneapolis, and crying my eyes out. And he would cast me in his play. Nepotism was a good thing. Not in big parts. He had to go to Langham because Langham wanted to give that actress the part in his brother, my brother's play too, which was Italian Straw Hat. And my brother said, no, this one goes to Tova. She's my sister and she's had no break here. She's understudied all your size 7 leading ladies. She has never gone on. She has worked hard and she's sitting there with 2 lines for 2 years, you know? So he gave me that part and then we toured with story theater where I played, you know, like a tubercular chicken and a tap dancing caterpillar. I also tap dance in Funny Girl. And I kept diligently on with my lessons. And then, because I could sing and dance, Cyrano was mounted as a musical. Michael Langham directing. And they said, how can we keep David Felchew and get rid of the sister? Because the sister was like, what? I said, at best, she'll be a performer. She'll never be an actress. He absolutely said that to me. You're a wonderful performer. You'll never be an actress. You know, I said, what should I do? Go on the trapeze? Little did I know that 45 years later, I would go on the trapeze for Fran and Barry Weisler.
That's right.
One of the greatest roles of my career.
Yeah. Pippin. Yeah.
Yeah. So they figured if they put me in Cyrano, they could get rid of me and with honor and keep him. And I had my 3 little roles, actress, poet, nun. And then Michelle Shea, God bless her, got a big job at the Negro Ensemble Company in New York, left to do that and left the food seller role vacant, and I could sing and dance, and Langham said, oh, just give it to her. So they made me the food seller, and I, at the Palace Theater, the food seller has the first line. So in my Broadway debut, I started the play. Oranges, pomegranates, lemonade. I remember it. And I went to rehearsal one day in Minnesota, and Michael Langham was missing. because he had been fired. And in his place was Michael Kidd, a guy from the great choreographer of Seven Brides for Seven Brothers and many, many other movie musicals. Basically, a Jew from New York whose parents were Russian. And he loved me because I could dance and sing and I could do cartwheels. He said, can anybody do cartwheels? I said, I can do a cartwheel. I can do. He said, Felch, I want two cartwheels, stage left, stage right, at the end of From Now Till Forever, the whole world. It was a conclusion of act one. And I did whatever he asked me to do. And anybody who couldn't sing and dance, he started to change the cast. And he came to see me in Golda's balcony. Because from those 14 lines in a red dress, I was on the marquee in 18 months at the O'Neill Theater, having carried spears and been told I was going to be nothing. I figured I'd be a chorus girl for the rest of my life, which was okay. I mean, Broadway was pretty exciting. And he came to see me in Golda's balcony. And he held my face in his hands and he cried and I cried. I said, you gave me my break. You gave me my break with 14 lines in a red dress. And if any actors are listening to this, always remember that. You can make something of nothing. You just got to get down there and be specific, be really specific. And the first way to master something is to know you don't know. If you know you don't know, at least you have your feet on the ground. So with Rosie Bryce, there are many things I don't know, but to be a Jewish mother, this I know, because the Tova Felchuness typecast me over and over again. And then my job was to do how many different, what is the difference between this person and this person, between Judy Stein and Daniel Melnick, who was not a mother, but a litigator, she was Sydney, and Rosie Bryce, whom I dedicate to Ada Tobias Kaplan, my British grandmother, who had a poker ring in the Bronx and was busted with Seal Somek and spent a night in jail. So there you go. There you go.
Tova Felchu, I mean, I don't know if you have another little known fact hidden anywhere under your sleeve. You've shared so much. If there's any last thing that you can think of that might make listeners around the world feel like, oh, and you know what else Tova told me?
Well, in terms of inspiration, I know it's a cliche, but don't give up. Don't give up on yourself. Don't give up on yourself. The thing I say to myself, and it may be a little known fact, before I go on every night, and I did 592 Golda's Balconies, it became the longest running one-woman play in the history of theater. And how many shows do you think I missed? Zero. And how many shows have I missed on Broadway in my career? That would be an unplanned absence, not an absence in the contract for your daughter's graduation. Zero. Zero. In my day, you didn't call out. You didn't call out. But let me tell you this. When the going gets rough, remember that it's just one or two people's opinion. It's apples and oranges. I was up for a Neil Simon play. And I auditioned, and I was told by Jay Binder, God bless him, to prepare three scenes. I was in the finals, and I came to audition, and Gene Sachs let me get through one page. And he said, thank you, that'll be all. I said, well, it was lost in Yonkers. I said, what do you mean? He said, you're never going to get this part, and I don't want to waste your time. I said, please, Mr. Sachs, I prepared all this material. Can I get through the scene? No. And I said, thank you very much. And I left the theater. And to say that I was weeping would be putting it mildly. I felt I'd been done an unfair term. And it was in front of Neil Simon, for whom I would eventually play his mother in a show that never got produced. But I did it with Matthew Broderick. It just never got out of the reading stage. And I took a cab home crying. And the cab in front of me hit a human being. And the human being came flying over that cab right in front of our car, which did not hit her. And I stopped our taxi and I held this human being's head in my lap until the ambulance came for her. And she was alive. She was alive. She just actually was negligent. She wasn't looking. And she was crossing the street against the light. She wasn't even in a crosswalk. It was on West End Avenue. And not only did it set my values straight, but years later, I'm a runner, And I was running around the reservoir, and I met Gene Sachs, and he said, Tova, I'm so thrilled to see you. I said, can I say something before we both die? I had this terrible experience with you where you dismissed me. And he said, I dismissed you because you were so bright. You were so wonderful. You were never going to get this part, and I really didn't want to waste your time. I said, well, I took it a different way. And he said, that was your choice. You know, I really believe in you. And you are, you're important in this business. He was very, very kind. So remember, your perceived value doesn't come from you. It comes from the way people see you and the way you imagine they see you. So believe in yourself. Shine your light and spread your light and stick with it. Be loyal to your light.
Tova Felchu, thank you for being on the podcast and thank you for your glorious, glorious work. Congratulations on this moment and all the moments ahead. And thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Alana Levine.
A-OK. One more thing. I keep getting emails asking how to donate to the podcast. First of all, thank you in advance. You are the kindest humans. Just go to littleknownfactspodcast.com/donations. That is where you donate. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. This episode of Little Known Facts was edited by Nicholas Klar. We record in New York City. The Little Known Facts theme song was written and recorded and sung by Georgia Famusa with backup vocals by Caleb Famusa. Thank you.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.